Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Do we have any announcements?
Hey, it's your birthday, man. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, when this episode airs, it will have been your birthday, what, the day before, right?
Yes, it's on the 17th.
How old are you now, Justin?
Well, according to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I will be the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything.
Interesting.
Yes. So, moving on. We're going to be putting out a very interesting episode on Patreon. We're calling it Death by Internet. It's two kind of off-the-cuff stories that we just wanted to give some commentary on. So, check that out.
Yeah, controversial stories, really. Patreon.com/Generation Y.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Tonight's case happens in Omaha, Nebraska, which is just a short 2-hour drive north of us. Kind of a local case, I guess. But I remember hearing about this, but I had no idea what was actually happening or the depth of the case. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about mysterious murders. The first set of murders happened in March of 2008, and the second set of murders happened in May of 2013. So there was a 5-year stretch in between the murders, but the investigators believed that they were connected.
I mean, when I hear about this, I think this is some kind of crazy serial killer. You could almost call it a cooling down period between the two murders. Sounds scary.
Let's talk about a man by the name of Anthony Garcia. Anthony Garcia, before he became a doctor, lived with his family in California. He had one brother named Fernando. He had a father named Frederick, who was a machinist for the U.S. Postal Service, and a mother, Estella, who was a nurse. The family was considered middle class. I would say that they were living a good, successful American life, I would say. Anthony was described as being healthy and playful by his mother. He was into sports such as football. He was a decent student and an altar boy.
Didn't he get like a bachelor's in biology from California State in the early 90s?
Yeah, back in 92. I don't know exactly how this began, but somewhere along the way, at least Anthony believed that he was being groomed to become a doctor. And so he would enter, you know, into medical school.
He entered University of Utah in 1999, and he would go on to get a residency at Bassett St. Elizabeth Medical Center in New York. But he left because he was yelling at a medical tech and acting very hostile to his coworkers.
So it looked like he was on the road to success, but things weren't really going that well, not behind the scenes.
Maybe this was just a speed bump along the way, right?
So as you said, he had yelled at it was a radiology technician. And there was a confrontation because, according to Anthony, this person had interrupted him. So he became angry. And then he went on to Creighton University Medical Center. That was in July of 2000. Well, that next year, he and another resident that were there were fired. In June of 2001, he was fired because he had sabotaged the critical medical exams of a colleague. And he did that by calling that other resident during the exam. And he had also left a body that he was performing an autopsy on face down, so that person became disfigured. The reason that he gets fired is because he's a resident. And from what I understand, talking to some nurses in the CRNA group that I'm part of, they explained that you kind of have to be careful when you're a resident. I mean, you're walking on eggshells almost. You can't yell at people. You can't act like you're a big dog because you're on the bottom rung and you have to work your way up. And this is all just part of the process. Anthony couldn't keep his cool during his residency, so he was fired. He was also getting bad reviews during that time. His academic performance was not there, not where it needed to be. Not saying he was a terrible student, but, you know, the expectations are high when you're going to medical school. There was also a lack of professionalism going on. So Anthony tried to stay in, and he appealed the decision, but that appeal was rejected. Now, from here, he continues to try and become a doctor. He continues to go through residency, but he's moving. So he goes on to the University of Illinois Hospital and Health Sciences System, and that's from August 2001 to July of 2003. But he ended up leaving early because of poor health and headaches and depression. He was issued a medical license in Illinois before he left, but it expired in July of 2014. Anthony had returned to live with his parents and tried to get a medical license where they lived in California. he was forced to withdraw after the board couldn't verify where he had completed his residency.
Well, he pretty much lied on his application, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's basically what's going on there. And because of all these things, he filed for bankruptcy in April of 2005. If you go over his record and you say, you know, he's attempting to become a doctor, but he's getting fired for unprofessional behavior, and yet he's still going at it, he must really want to become a doctor, right?
You would think, because he's not giving up. The fact that he's been fired and just had so many roadblocks put in front of him, it looks like the system's kind of working the way it's supposed to. I just finished listening to that Dr. Death series, and I had zero faith in the system after listening to that. So this is giving me some hope and some faith back.
Well, from 2007 on, he's still attempting to get licensed. He's still having issues because of his firing that happened, you know, back in 2003. From 2007 on, he continues to try and get licensed in different states, but he's haunted by his firing years ago. And then it's like he can't keep it together. One of the questions that's surrounding Anthony here is that either he wants to become a doctor, or maybe his family, namely his father, has pushed him to become a doctor. No matter what's going on, it's this expectation that he has to fulfill.
Possibly parents can put pressures on their children to accomplish and do more than what they have done just to do better for themselves. It seems that he's wanting to do this for both himself and for his parents, or just out of pure pressure. So he keeps trying, but his attitude, personality, mental state doesn't seem to allow him to be successful.
And the states that he was attempting to get licensed in were Louisiana, Indiana, Texas, Illinois, even in Kentucky. Sometimes he would get a temporary license, and he did do some work for a prison system. But in March of 2012, Anthony was pulled over in the Chicago area. He had a blood alcohol content level of 0.211.
That's a little over the legal limit.
Yeah, I mean, what is the legal limit, Justin?
0.08.
That's way over. He was convicted of drunk driving. He was given probation. And in May, he bought a house in Terre Haute, Indiana. Now, he applied again for a medical license in Indiana, but was rejected. I don't know necessarily how important this is, but he was allowed to withdraw his application. You might ask, we just went through and talked about this guy who wanted to become a doctor, but couldn't keep it together. He acted unprofessional and also had a growing alcohol problem.
It's possible that he's depressed because he's not becoming a doctor. It's possible that he's self-medicating for other issues.
But the reason we bring up Anthony Garcia is because he's going to be a suspect in a series of murders. And these series of murders began on March 13th, 2008, when cameras catch Thomas Hunter, who is 11 years old, arriving home from school. His father, William Hunter, arrived home from his job as a doctor at Creighton University Medical Center just after 5 p.m. His wife, Claire, was in Hawaii for work, so she wasn't around. Thomas Hunter went into the home and found both his son, Thomas, who was 11, and his housekeeper, Shirley Sherman, stabbed to death with the knives still in their necks. William Hunter just happened to be one of the people that made the decision to fire Anthony Garcia.
He was fired by this guy, and that obviously went down on his record somehow. And he was denied licenses and kicked out of residencies over and over ever since then. Kind of makes sense that he might be holding a grudge, but this is such a long time later.
I know people get attacked. They get shot. They get stabbed every day in America. But Omaha was not prepared for this. And according to the police, this looked like a home invasion.
people getting stabbed in the neck with knives. I mean, this is brutal. I would almost say it goes past a home invasion and looks more personal, but what is a housekeeper and the son, you know, do they have enemies? No. So it's really random.
Neighbors of the hunters saw an olive-skinned man in a silver or gray SUV in the area at the time. They say that the man was carrying a briefcase, was wearing dark clothing. It appeared as though he had been allowed into the house by the housekeeper. A police sketch was drawn up of this man and released the day after the murders. On March 19th, there were separate funerals held for both Thomas Hunter and for Shirley Sherman. And then following that, this is about 4 years later, the murders were featured on America's Most Wanted. The police couldn't figure out who had done this because there just wasn't enough forensic evidence.
No, and it's such a random killing. How are they going to tie it back to anybody? And even if they go, oh, this guy's got a grudge, has a grudge from years before, it's just they're not going to make that connection. Nobody's going to make that connection. It's no knock against law enforcement here, but if they don't have anything tying anyone to the crime, it's going to be a rough time for them to figure this case out.
Yeah, they needed a fingerprint. They needed DNA. They needed something. And they just didn't have it. Whoever had done this had planned it very well, except that they were seen. And you would think being seen, that's pretty bad. But it wasn't enough for the police to make an arrest. Now, they had found $833 in cash inside of Shirley's purse. As they went around the residence, they couldn't find anything that had been stolen, at least nothing apparent. So this was not a robbery. This looked like a hit.
Yeah, it's no longer a home invasion because usually those revolve around some kind of financial gain.
The only real suspect that they were looking at back then was Shirley's daughter, had a boyfriend at the time, who Shirley had a protection order against. So you might think, uh-oh, maybe this was someone who's really angry, and this was how they were going to, you know, strike back. But that didn't go anywhere.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good place to start. Who's got a restraining order against who? Okay, but he wasn't at the home, and he probably had a pretty solid alibi. So
yeah, he did have an alibi. There was a $25,000 reward offered for information, which later went up to $54,000. And the police were also asking the hunters, who were both doctors, whether they could think of any disgruntled employees, students, or patients who may have been angry with them. William and his colleague, Roger Brombach, made a list of people that they thought, well, these people were probably angry with us, could have a grudge. On that list was Anthony Garcia.
They haven't interacted with this guy in a while, but they remembered him.
A bronze statue of Thomas Hunter was dedicated outside of the Creighton Cardiac Center in June of 2010. And as I said, in 2012, they had a segment about these murders on America's Most Wanted, which I remember watching that show, and I remember thinking, this is so cool because the audience is watching. And sometimes someone watching says, hey, wait a minute, I recognize the person in the sketch, or I think I know what happened there. And then they call in, and sometimes a tip will lead to an arrest.
Yeah, it's happened many times on that show. So it was an incredible crowdsourcing show before the term even existed. So we got to fast forward to May of 2013. Roger Brombach and his wife, Mary, they're doing FaceTime with their daughter, and it's around 1:30 to 2:40 in the afternoon. And on May 14th, a piano mover arrives at the home, and the couple were preparing to move to West Virginia. The piano mover arrives and finds the front door is open and part of a gun magazine near the threshold, and like pieces of a gun and a spent shell casing. He immediately calls 911, and the police arrive. They find Roger and Mary both murdered, and very similar to the way the hunters were killed. Mary had been stabbed to death and had clear defensive wounds on her hand, Roger had been stabbed, but gunshot wounds were his eventual cause of death. So obviously Roger put up more of a fight, so they had to resort to their gun. The murders were immediately familiar to the detectives from the 2008 murder. So 5 years earlier, they're looking at this and saying, whoa, this is very similar. And they make the connection, which is pretty incredible for law enforcement. The stab wounds were to the right side of the neck, which doesn't happen that often in stabbings. The knife was left at the scene, but not in the victim still, just at the scene. So yeah, this is kind of crazy. And then they find this piece of a gun that was left behind.
Well, I think they made the connection because of where the wounds were. It just reminded them of the other killings.
Well, I mean, the whole thing, it appears to be a home invasion. Somebody came into the house and just murdered them. Nothing really looks out of place. Nobody stole anything. Stab wounds to the neck. What? Come on. This is almost a replay.
Now, the police, they believe that the Brombachs were killed on May 12th, which is the very day that they had spoken with their daughter. On the same day, the burglar alarm at a home of someone who worked with William and Roger went off. She and her husband were out at lunch and received a call at 2:16 p.m. from the security company. Now, when they got home, they found their front door open, but they couldn't find anything missing. There was trace evidence that yielded DNA that was left on the door handle. We'll get into that just yet. A task force was formed in order to solve these four murders when it became obvious that they were connected. Now, what did I just say earlier? William and Roger? Well, William Hunter and Roger Brombach were the two doctors who fired Anthony Garcia.
And they both wrote down his name on people that might hate them.
Now, again, these murders happened 5 years apart. The boy and the housekeeper, and then 5 years later, the Brombachs.
And years after this termination.
It's at this point that the one person, when they look at all these names, the one person who seems to fit in as having a connection to both of these men becomes clear, and that's Anthony Garcia.
Get a warrant. They start looking for credit card records and his movements. Very interesting, because on May 12th, the day of the murders, they found that Anthony had stopped at a Council Bluffs convenience store just hours before the murders. And he had multiple credit card records that show him in Omaha the day and around the time of the Brombach murders.
Even though he didn't live there.
Yeah. Kind of a thing. Oh, and that piece of a gun, they were able to identify it as a 9mm Smith & Wesson pistol. Just a month or two before this murder, he had purchased a Smith & Wesson 9mm pistol in Indiana. Huh.
Not only that, but in January of 2013, about a month before, firefighters broke down his door. They found him passed out in his living room, and he was surrounded by empty beer cans, and there was a gun. Well, the police took his gun. That's when Anthony Garcia ended up buying another gun. The gun that was actually used in the crime was a gun that he purchased because his other gun had been taken by police.
Huh. They have him at a convenience store the day of. Then they have witnesses that saw a black SUV. Well, he drives a black SUV. That would be a black Mercedes SUV. And then on Sunday, May 12th, at 2:26 p.m., his credit card was used again at a Wingstop, which was just 4 miles away from the Brombachs. Phone records will put him driving back through Iowa. His credit card will be used at a hotel in Des Moines. So he's traveling to Omaha on the very days that this murder happens. And he's buying stuff along the way. And between his credit cards and his phone, we have all of his movements. So it's kind of obvious to me.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts, and when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So fast forward a month to July 14th, 2013, two FBI agents are following Anthony Garcia, and they're using his cell phone pings to track him down, and he's 2 hours southwest of his home in Salem, Illinois. Two FBI agents rented a hotel room where they could see his black Mercedes SUV.
So these officers are keeping an eye on Anthony, only they fall asleep. And then one of them wakes up at 5 a.m. and looks for the Mercedes, but it's gone. So they have to get in their car and head down the highway. They're getting updated phone information from Anthony's phone. Then they have to backtrack to where Anthony was. You know, they've already gone into his home. They've already seized evidence there. Now they just need to get him. They're trying to make sure he's not around anybody. They just want to take him into custody without any issues. I mean, they know this is a guy who's regularly armed. Now, when they pull Anthony over, this is on the freeway entering into Jonesboro, Illinois. They look inside of his car, and inside is a crowbar, a sledgehammer, an unloaded handgun, an LSU lab coat, and a pack of 45 caliber bullets. So when they ask him, "Hey, Anthony, what are you doing?" Anthony responds that he's going to New Orleans. Only Anthony's pretty drunk at this point. Now, I said that they had already been in his home. When they were searching his house, there wasn't really much there. I mean, as far as furniture, I mean, they said it looked kind of barren. The house was in the process of being foreclosed upon. I mean, Anthony was not working. And that's because of his poor work record. He couldn't stay anywhere for any amount of time because, like I said, he couldn't keep it together. Even when he did work somewhere, it's like his duties were being minimized more and more because the people he was working for realized, hey, this guy can't really work with people. So when they went through his home, they discovered his financial statements. They showed that he was just broke. He's flat broke. He had collected negative reviews from when he was at Creighton. It was in like a pile of notes. They thought it was odd because, you know, when they got to the home, in the driveway was a Ferrari. And we all know a Ferrari just says wealth, you know? But they said that's literally the only thing he had that suggested he had money. Other than he had a home, but
the place is trashed and just beer cans and stuff.
They also found a woman who was, she was an erotic dancer, and it's someone that Anthony had spent a good amount of time around. Her name was Cecilia Hoffman, and Anthony, according to her, had confessed to killing a young boy and an old woman. He also said that he had to do it, even though they didn't really deserve it.
I wonder who he was referring to.
Well, and it's weird because sometimes when people confess to someone else, usually it's, yeah, I killed them, so what? But this is more of a, I didn't really want to do it, but I had to.
It's this weird matter-of-fact statement.
On July 18th of 2013, Anthony Garcia is extradited from Illinois to Omaha. You know, Omaha is where the murders occurred. On July 23rd, he's formally charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder, and he's held without bail because of the crimes. You know, I mean,
very brutal. Yeah.
Brutal crimes. Roger Brombach was shot to death, and then his wife was stabbed to death.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the 2 prior victims were stabbed to death. Very personal killings. And in a hearing on August 14th, the judge decided, hey, there's enough evidence to show that Anthony Garcia probably committed these crimes. Of course, his defense is saying, you guys don't have anything. Where's the forensics on this?
Yeah, because they're not finding DNA. They're not finding fingerprints at first. But they have his credit card records. They have his cell phone pings. And they have the piece of this gun. They got enough so far.
His trial begins on September 26, 2016. Entering into this trial, the defense believes you guys don't have anything on our guy because you don't have forensics. Nothing concrete. I mean, you have sightings of a guy that kind of looked like our guy.
Driving a similar SUV as our guy, yeah.
And then you also have some evidence. These are some notes they found, which we'll get into, that suggest maybe he's guilty, that are in his own handwriting. But that's all they have. And they're like, eh, you don't have much. So I think they're pretty confident. But then the prosecution is thinking, we're not letting this guy out because this guy is the killer. We know it. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is where they have to hash it out.
And what's up with that DNA evidence they found on that doorknob? His defense is claiming that it exonerates him, right?
Now, I mentioned before that they had found some DNA on the door.
So there's your forensics, right?
Well, it has to be allowed into evidence for it to work. You know, the judge can say, eh, this isn't allowed, or they can change what something means in a courtroom. It's that simple. The judge has discretion. So in this case, the defense believed that this DNA exonerated their client, which is amazing because when the DNA analyst for the prosecution tested it, the odds were staggering.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a DNA match. I know we probably say DNA matched or whatever, but it's really just excluding somebody. And it didn't exclude him. In fact, it was very likely that it was him that was the contributor of this DNA.
But there was a DNA analyst that worked for the defense who said that Garcia was excluded as a contributor to the sample. So there's a disagreement there. And that's not surprising because, you know, one side saying he didn't do it, the other side saying he did. Well, in comes the judge, Judge Gary Randall, and he told Garcia's defense team that if their expert made any grand conclusions that Garcia was not a contributor to the sample that was found on the door, then it would allow the prosecutors to attempt to introduce an advanced DNA analysis indicating he likely did. So it's sort of like, if you want to make this claim, then I'm going to allow the prosecution to use their DNA analysis that's considered, it's newer.
It's going to show that he's absolutely the guy.
Yeah. So in other words, tread lightly here. Watch how you do this because this could cause the prosecution to have something to fire back at you.
Which is weird because why not just use the advanced testing? I just think let it all in. But here we're having that legal melee that they play where they consider what's admissible and what isn't. So it was a little compromise there.
I don't know. I do think it's weird. I'd rather all the evidence got in, but originally the idea here was is that if they allowed this analysis to come in, that it would push the trial back, you know, because it just whole bunch more information they have to hash out in court that's coming in all of a sudden. I mean, it had taken a while for it to come through. As we know, it's not like in the TV shows where they get some DNA and then they run it overnight and the next day they get their answer. It doesn't work like that. Sometimes it takes months or even, you know, what, more than a year sometimes, it seems like. The court didn't get into this, but what this is touch DNA. And so anytime you have touch DNA, it always seems like there's controversy. At least, you know, like there was touch DNA in the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Or Avery case or whatever. It's never considered solid, I guess.
Now, the state's expert in their testing of this DNA, the reason why it was staggering, the odds were staggering anyway, was because it showed that Garcia or a male member of his family very likely left that sample. So this caused some issues in the court. The defense said that, you know, when it came to the DNA, there were two DNA profiles on the door handles to this home. And the state's expert said that there weren't. So which is it, you know?
Exactly. But with all the other circumstantial evidence, I think we're putting together a pretty solid case. The defense is doing what they're going to do.
You know, we could go over this DNA for another 10 minutes if we get into the technical side of it, but I don't actually think this is a big piece of the puzzle.
No.
And I don't think I'm the only one thinking that, but when they get into Anthony Garcia's actions over the last so many years, leading up to the murders and beyond the murders, we start to see a picture of a guy who's spiraling downward. When you put in that he's got a connection to both of these families that suffered losses here, and that he had a motive, and that it was possibly revenge for being fired, and that it followed him everywhere he went, you can start to see this is the guy that did it. Let's start with what witnesses were saying about him. People that worked with him, they were saying that he couldn't be trusted to work with actual people. Like he ended up becoming a glorified assistant whenever he was working at any of these places after he was fired because he just couldn't keep his cool. So he had anger issues and he had alcoholism issues and he was spending a lot of time with erotic dancers.
He had a bunch of weird notes that he kept that he details pretty much how to commit a crime and get away with it. Down to details such as putting Band-Aids on his fingers.
Yeah, he wrote notes for all kinds of things. And some of the things are really odd, like reminding himself to brush his teeth. Other notes that seemed really bizarre probably had something to do with the murders. Common shoes, Sears black disposable, Band-Aids on tips of fingers, doorbell in parentheses, and also in parentheses, black gloves. Another note had Chinese, tie arms to sides, blindfold, t-shirt, torso. Some of his other writings referenced a plot to steal someone's identity. Anthony wrote, apply or get a credit card in someone else's name. Now, as far as the fleeing, you know, his plans to get away, there were notes found that detailed him buying or renting a boat, buying fishing gear to look like a fisherman, travel to New Orleans, Canada, or the Gulf of Mexico. Furthermore, more notes, in his right hand for this trip, a hidden gun, and in his left hand, his phone, passport, and other documents, and poison, and in parentheses following that, hidden. Now, these notes were found in a bag. So there's like this LSU bag that was in his Mercedes-Benz. The police confiscated it. They also found a note that was dated 2 days before he was arrested, and it was addressed to his parents. And the note said, please hold these documents in case of an emergency. So they know these are his notes. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is almost like OCD stuff. Like he's got to do it. He also wrote notes. One of them had to do with putting Band-Aids on his fingertips so as not to leave fingerprints, obviously. Then he also had a note detailing how he would flee so that he wouldn't be captured. I don't know. These notes are pretty damning. Now, his defense doesn't really get to stick with him all the way through the trial. We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
But, you know, they tried saying, look, you have all kinds of crazy notes here. How are you picking that out? Because they're good detectives?
And they're finding, well, there weren't any fingerprints and blah, blah, blah. And here we have a guy that's pretty much saying how he did it.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I know we didn't really play a game of who was it at the beginning, but that's because that's not what this case is about.
No, it's sort of a foregone conclusion that this is the guy that did it.
Yeah. We'll get into why this case got on our radar and why we went with it.
So what happened with his defense attorneys?
Attorneys cost money, unless they're provided by the state. Well, his team, they ran out of funds. That came up in court, and the judge made the decision, well, I'm going to bring in some
public defenders, right?
Some public defenders. This is a problem because, you know, for anybody who cares about the accused or the convicted's rights, this is a problem because they've had attorneys this whole time. And then all of a sudden you're going to say, oh, we're going to bring in these public defenders. Well, that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I think that it should have been probably deemed a mistrial and then started over with the public defenders. That would just make more linear sense to me, but hey, this train's left the station. We can't stop it now, right?
Well, that's not the only hiccup this trial had.
Oh, you're talking about how our accused defendant, Anthony Garcia goes catatonic during trial, and he's not responding to his attorneys. He's not responding to the judge or anyone. And they even have to wheel him into the courtroom in a wheelchair, and his body sort of just slumped awkwardly, and his head is usually tilted to the right or left, and he closes his eyes and appears to sleep through most of the proceedings, especially when it gets to the end of the trial where he's found guilty and we get to the sentencing phase. He's just sleeping through this, and he's not responding or acting like a normal human being would.
Yeah, one of the questions prior to this trial was, is Anthony Garcia fit to stand trial? You know, what is his mental condition? Well, they found that he was fit to stand trial.
Yeah, they actually claim, and I've read these comments everywhere, that he's faking it so as to not get the death penalty or as to get away with this crime. I have to say that the guy's had problems up until this point, and I won't say that what was he faking it 5 years ago? Was he faking it when he was acting hostile in medical school and stuff? Like, no, he's got problems. He's got mental issues, and I just don't think he has just a crappy personality that he just got through life and now he's putting on this whole front. He's apparently given up. I'll say that much. Haven't any of you like just said, I want to give up and be wheeled around in a wheelchair by people and just not even have to move anymore? I see that. I don't know if that's an act, but he's just stopped moving. When you see pictures of him or video, it's really weird.
Yeah, he had seen a colleague years before because of depression. I guess when that doctor spoke about it, he said that Anthony couldn't stop the bad thoughts. Yeah, if you look through his life, it's very clear there's a pattern here that something was going on with Anthony Garcia. I don't think it's as simple as saying he was having trouble with his career. I don't think it's that simple. There has to be some sort of mental illness going on here. And if you combine that with his deteriorating state, we don't know where it would lead him. And I know they said he was fit to stand trial. They sent him off, like, I think 3 times to be evaluated. But he's not cooperating.
No, his behavior is completely just ridiculous. I mean, it's catatonic. So what do you do with that?
And some have said, well, he's been in solitary confinement for several years. You know, Justin, solitary confinement. I mean, what happens?
You can go to solitary for weeks and it will screw you up. So if you're in solitary isolation for years, I don't see many people coming back from that. Now, did he not deserve it? I mean, he brutally murdered four people. So I'm not feeling a lot of sympathy for the guy, but putting somebody in solitary for that long.
But I mean, what's the condition they're in? They're in a room, right? They don't get a window, do they?
No, they do nothing for 23 hours a day. And it's either, it used to be in the dark, but now there's a light on all the time. Can you imagine going to sleep with a horrible fluorescent light shining down on you 24 hours a day? They get 1 hour to leave their cell and exercise and shower, just do whatever, sometimes.
Anthony Garcia was already isolating himself prior to being put in solitary confinement, but this guy is not, he's not interacting well with other people. And I don't think you can discount that. Not when you take everything in. You take in the murders, his firings, all of his actions. I mean, we could go down a long list of all these crazy things he was doing. He would sit on break and eat a head of lettuce like it was an apple, is the way I read it. And he would wash it down with a jug of milk. And sometimes he would stand outside and he would just put a coat over his head.
Not stable. And again, these are things that he's doing back in med school, back in the early days. This isn't a long game to get fired from a job and then go on to kill somebody. But some people think he's faking it.
The trouble here is that anytime you have murders and, you know, all four of these people, innocent people, were brutally murdered by this guy, Anthony Garcia, you say to the victims' families, or you say to people who are really passionate about the, you know, a case like this, you say, well, he was mentally ill. The first words out of their mouth isn't going to be, oh, so there might be a mitigating circumstance, right? Because that's something they talked about in court. No, they're worried that he might get away with something.
Yeah. They say that the only mitigating circumstance they found was...
he had no prior record.
Yeah. No priors.
No prior criminal record.
I guess that shows you have good character, maybe, but... the final thing we have, the snag in this case, you know, so we have the lawyers being removed and public defenders replacing the lawyers. And then we have his catatonic state. But during sentencing, and this is a capital murder trial, so he's going to get the death penalty. The judge, who just had back surgery earlier, had a medical emergency right before reading the sentence, and he had to leave the courtroom, and then two other judges had to come in and finalize the trial.
Yeah, they were actually the judges who, with the original judge, Randall, who determined that he was fit to stand trial.
So obviously the defense attorneys are going to object to this because they're saying this is ridiculous that we had one judge all through the trial, and now we're not even going to get that judge for the sentencing. But they had already determined the sentence of death, and all they were really doing was just reading it.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
But again, this is one more thing that went wrong with this trial that in other trials could cause a mistrial.
Well, and could cause a successful appeal, right?
Well, it's a death penalty case, so there's an automatic appeal. And this might get overturned.
Yeah, and you know, it was years ago when there was some controversy over whether to allow the death penalty to apply to people who had mental illness.
And that's the question with this case is his crimes were heinous. They absolutely meet the requirements for the death penalty. But what are we getting from putting this guy down if he's not stable?
Now, it would take a while for us to go through all of the reasons why, you know, putting someone to death who has mental illness doesn't make any sense, right? We could get into a death penalty debate too, but the real point here is some people, like a Ted Bundy, kill and they know absolutely what they're doing. They're predators. Then you have some people who might kill, but their mental state is such that we don't really know who's running the ship there. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think a lot of people have pushed back on this and said he's faking it. I mean, there were even comments when he was being wheeled in. Some people were commenting and saying, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
And it's because they don't want justice slipping away. Let's talk about his family. His brother Fernando, his parents, they have made comments about this case. I don't know how much they believe whether he did it or not. But what I did learn from listening to their comments was Fernando came out and said, my brother never wanted to be a doctor. And this brings up the whole question, you know, is there some sort of factor in this of his wanting revenge because he was pushed into this becoming a doctor, going through medical school, going through residency. And the reason why he was acting unprofessional is because he just really didn't want to do it.
Yeah, he's being pushed in a direction that he never wanted to go in, and he's resentful and angry.
Anthony wrote in a journal, math was my favorite subject from first through 12th grade. I wanted to be a mathematician. My parents would not let me. And that is something that a lot of people might point at and say, no, his parents did push him to become a doctor. His father said, I never pushed him to do anything. You know, his father drove him to his first residency. You know, he packed up the vehicle and drove his son and was so proud of him. But see, the way his dad describes it is, I just wanted to support him. He said, if he decided to change careers, then I'd be fine with it. I just wanted my son to do what he wanted to do. You know, even while he was going through this process of trying to get medical licenses, he's also submitting to get into law school, you know, but he would send in the stuff that he had filled out for his residencies, and he would literally turn those in for his applications. And it's like, you just can't do that.
You just copy and paste, right?
So I guess what I'm getting at is there are a lot of questions still about who pushed Anthony. I'll tell you what, Anthony was an adult. Anthony could have made up his own mind. And I understand there's pressure from family. When I look into this, I think it's clear that Anthony has had a mental illness, or maybe more than one, for many years now, because there are things that he was doing that just don't make any sense. And again, like you're saying, this isn't a long game. It's not like he's going to fake all these things for all these years. It's just apparent that this was a guy who was spiraling downward. Unfortunately, no one was there to catch him or stop him before four people lost their lives.
You know, the prosecution paints a pretty grim picture of he planned this. I mean, these murders happened so long after the termination, after the firing. And then the second set of murders happened 5 years later. You can't get any more premeditation than that. And technically, he qualifies as a serial killer at this point. So yes, he is an absolute danger to society and needed to be stopped. But that whole idea of the state putting someone down that might not have a grasp on their actions, but they sure could prove that he had a grasp on it because he planned it and he executed it and he had notes on how he was going to do it.
So Justin, people will look at that and say, he's got the notes and it seems like he's planning this. Yeah. How can you claim that he was out of his mind when, you know, he killed these people or at any other time?
Well, aren't we all a little out of our minds? We're just kind of on a spectrum of being stable. There are people that go from very functional to dysfunctional. Just because you're able to plan something like the Aurora shooter in the movie theater, it doesn't mean that you're stable. It just means that you're stable enough to do what you did. This country has a serious issue with addressing mental health problems, and it's something that needs to get a little bit more attention. And here we have another case of, if this guy would have had help, or if these issues would have been addressed sooner, could this whole situation have been avoided? I don't know, but it's definitely worth looking into.
For me, it's really simple. This guy needs to go to prison. I just don't think they made the right choice by pursuing the death penalty. It's unnecessary. And now what it's going to do, it brings up that whole question of, can you put someone who's mentally ill to death? They could have just avoided the whole thing by just going for life in prison. But really, yeah, this case is fascinating. If you look it up, you can see video and pictures of Anthony Garcia being wheeled in this wheelchair when he was first brought into court. He's this relatively handsome guy, seems well-dressed, but over time, it's like he stopped shaving and he stopped taking care of himself. He transforms into this person who just has, I guess, either given up or has been broken.
I'll definitely be paying attention to the appeals process that he goes through, because I think it'll be very telling what they'll deem is worthy of a mistrial or a retrial.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.